Welcome to those listening online. Tonight we have Sebastian giving us the second talk on God manifestation, and he's speaking about God manifest in David's life. So the reading's Isaiah 55. So that's serving as a reading. I'll ask Sebastian.
Well, good evening, everyone. Welcome back to the next in this series on manifesting God. And so tonight, we're looking at David, as Keith said. So we had a lot to cover last week with Joseph, and this evening there was a lot more material to choose from, because we're considering one of the characters that has the most written about them in the whole Bible, and that's David. So firstly, just a comment about our reading. I decided not to choose a chapter from the life of David, but I rather chose this chapter from Isaiah, and I felt this really beautifully captures some of the essence of David, and it sets a really nice background for what we're going to be looking at tonight. We will refer back to this reading a couple of times as we go, and we might look at it a bit more at the end and point out some of the ways that it shows of the characteristics of David manifesting God. But don't worry, tonight we won't be working our way through the whole life of David like we did for Joseph. We've got far too much of a story to do that. So instead, this week we're going to take a bit of a different approach, and we're just going to be touching on various different themes that occur through the record of David. So the first theme for us to consider is that of shepherding. And we'll just mention this one briefly since we spent considerable time on it last week. But again, we have another Bible character who spent much of their early life as a shepherd and ended up using these shepherding characteristics that they've learnt in their later role of leading the people. And as we saw last week, David knew that this was a characteristic of God, and he knew that by showing these characteristics, he was manifesting God. And last week, we looked at this psalm where David so profoundly declares God to be his shepherd, which is Psalm 23, which is there for you on the slide. So David, as a young boy, he led, he fed, and he protected his sheep. And we're told specifically that he defended them from a lion and a bear. And we saw that portrayed by the junior Sunday school in the play on Friday night. And as a king, David protected his people. He fought many battles for them. And he led them to many victories, starting even well before he was king. And he knew when he was doing that he was doing God's work. In fact, God was working through him. And so God was the master shepherd, and David was just his implement. And he said this many times, that it was God fighting and God protecting him. And he proclaimed it before Goliath. And if you want to turn up 1 Samuel chapter 17, it's also on the slide, verses 34 to 37, we have this declaration of David about the hand of God in his life. So 1 Samuel chapter 17, verses 34 to 37. And David said to Saul, "Thy servant kept his father's sheep. And there came a lion and a bear and took a lamb out of the flock. And I went out after him and smote him and delivered it out of his mouth. And when he arose against me, I caught him by his beard and smote him and slew him. And thy servant slew both the lion and the bear. And this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing he hath defied the armies of the living God." David said, moreover, "The Lord that delivered me out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear, he will deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine." And Saul said to David, "Go, and the Lord be with thee." So we see here David was doing God's work in protecting his people, and he was showing that, well, it was also God doing this work. God was the one protecting his people. God was the one that was the shepherd looking after David. And so in this way, in protecting his people, he was clearly manifesting God as the people, as the protector of his flock. And as a shepherd, David not only looked after the nation physically and protecting them, but he also spiritually led and fed them. And he brought the people back to God after that. In the time of Saul, God had been somewhat ignored in the latter part of Saul's reign. And we see an expression of this in 1 Chronicles chapter 13, verses 1 to 3. And David consulted with the captains of hundreds and thousands and with every leader, and David said to the congregation of Israel, "If it seem good unto you, and that it be of the Lord our God, let us send abroad unto our brethren everywhere that are left in the land of Israel, and with them also the priests and the Levites which are in their cities and suburbs, that they may gather themselves unto us, and let us bring again the ark of our God to us, for we inquired not at it in the days of Saul." So David is again manifesting God in this, and he's in bringing the people back to God, giving them the spiritual food and the worship and the leadership that they need to flourish as a nation. And he speaks in the Psalms and in the Proverbs of this idea of the things of God being as food and as drink and as sustenance, as health to him and to the nation. And we have a variety of those verses from the Psalms and Proverbs there on the screen for us about how David felt about God and the things of God, that he thirsted for it and that it sustained him. And we looked at how this also applies to us in our class last week about feeding, sustaining and helping one another in the things of God, as Peter was exhorted and then exhorted the elders to feed and look after and lead the ecclesia. But it's not just this occupation of shepherding that contains these principles of God manifestation. It was also David's kingship. The kingship itself that has aspects that reflect God's character and God's ways. So we know the story of when the people asked for a king to reign over them. And in a way, they were rejecting God, because God was meant to be their king. But they wanted a man to lead them, to stand in front of them. And the first king who they chose to rule over them was the tall and handsome Saul. He was their leader. He stood taller than everyone else. He was supposed to lead them out into battle. But he was not a godly king. And he ended up being a little bit more cowardly and listening to all the wrong people. He disobeyed God. And consequently, God rejected him from being king and handed his dynasty to another. And that other king that was anointed of God was David. David was to be the leader, the one who would make the godly rules, the godly laws, to protect, to lead, and to judge fairly his people. And we know that we also are going to be kings and to reign with Christ in the coming kingdom. And there are so many lessons for us to learn about manifesting God in this kingship. And we see there on the slide, there's the verses from Revelation talking about the redeemed that reign as kings and priests in the earth. And Paul exhorts the young man Timothy in 2 Timothy chapter 2, verses 11 to 12. "This is a faithful saying. If we be dead with him, we shall also live with him. If we suffer, we shall also reign with him." And that's talking about reigning with Christ in his kingdom. And so these ideas of kingship, we may not be a king over the nation of Israel like David was, and like God is the king of his people. But in the kingdom, we will be kings and priests teaching the nations. And even today, we are to be examples and leaders to bring people to God and show them the way to live in our leadership. And so we can learn many lessons here about manifesting God in our kingship and our probation time that we have now before we are kings. And so David also was an example to all the godly kings that came thereafter. And as we've seen here, we are to be some of those godly kings to come in the future. But also for kings like Hezekiah and Josiah, they didn't have a good example of a father, but it is said of them that they did the ways of their father David. David was the role model. David was the example of a godly king that led his people in worshipping God and doing what is right. And we know in the story that David didn't try and seize the kingship for himself as soon as he was anointed. He waited for God's time. And we also need to be patient, waiting for the kingdom. And just the same, God is being patient. God is waiting and giving more opportunities for people to come to a knowledge of him before he sends his son. And so in that patience, David was manifesting God. And we need to also manifest God in our patience and our endurance as we look forward to that day. And David didn't use the kingship for his own benefit. He tried to help those that he could. He did things like preparing for Solomon to build God's temple. He cared for others like Mephibosheth. And he protected the people, as we discussed earlier. And God is the same way. He's doing things for our benefit. When he was the king and the God of the nation of Israel, he wasn't asking for their sacrifices and their tithes because he needed them. He was doing it for the people. And God was constantly showing care to those who needed it most, preparing, and he is now preparing for the coming kingdom and preparing our characters and giving us leadership and written examples that we can know the way to go. And so in the same way, we are not going to be using our kingship as a benefit for us in the kingdom. It is part of our reward, but we're going to be using it to better the earth and to spread the name of God to the nations and the mortal population and to worship. And so another incredible thing to consider about David was his ability to see the bigger picture. I mentioned this in my exhort earlier in this year, but I'll just point out again that it wasn't till after the reign of David that God specifically names Jerusalem as his chosen city. But David knew. He brought the head of Goliath there when it was still Gentile controlled. He conquered it once he was king and made it his capital. He took the ark there rather than returning it to what you would assume was the natural place, which was the tabernacle set up at Shiloh. David knew the story of Abraham. He understood the significance of those things that were recorded, and he could see past the letter of the law to the spirit that was behind it. The symbols of the coming Messiah, he could see these signs so clearly. And so when God gave to David this promise of a seed to reign on his throne in 2 Samuel 7, this seed that would reign forever, David understood what God was talking about. He knew that it wasn't just about his dynasty and Solomon, but God had a greater plan involving his chosen Messiah as one of David's seed. And so David, we know that he meditated on God's law, and he has many psalms about that. And in this meditation, he found so many gems and so much meaning in these scriptures that were overlooked by so many of his contemporaries. And so David was able to write messianic psalms. Some of them he wouldn't have realized at the time, but some of them, such as Psalm 72, which I've looked at before, David would have known when he wrote that psalm that it was to be fulfilled by the promised seed. And David had this great insight into the scriptures, surpassing his contemporaries. The Levites were supposed to be the ones teaching the people about God's law, teaching people about the lessons and the types contained therein, not just the rituals and the practices and the rules. But they didn't understand all these things, but David saw it so clearly. And it's kind of incredible how well that he understood things. And many of the Jews didn't understand it. And Paul himself didn't understand it until Christ revealed it to him. And then he turns around and shows us in some of his letters in the New Testament how so many of these things in the law and these examples are talking about Christ and these great symbols. But David knew that. And so we saw in our reading this evening that God's thoughts are so far above our thoughts. And so David was thinking at this higher level, a higher level than those around him. And we too have been called to be spiritually minded, to have the mind of Christ in us, to think on a higher level than the world around us, to see the bigger picture, to see God's picture. And Paul exhorts us in Romans chapter 12, verse 2, to be not conformed to this world, but be you transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. And so Paul's saying this: the world around us wants to conform us, wants to make us think a certain way, but we need to transform our minds. And Paul also talks about this in Romans chapter 8. For they that are after the flesh do mind the things of the flesh, but they that are after the Spirit, the things of the Spirit. For to be carnally minded is death, but to be spiritually minded is life and peace, because the carnal mind is enmity against God, for it is not subject to the law of God, neither indeed can be. So then they that are in the flesh cannot please God. But ye are not in the flesh, but in the Spirit. So it be that Spirit of God dwell in you. Now if any man have not the Spirit of Christ, he is none of his. And so it's that Spirit of God that is within us that should be transforming our minds and leading us to not think along the same patterns as the world around us, but to think about on this higher plane, on these godly thoughts. The world around us thinks with human reasoning, and it tries its best to indoctrinate everyone into buying their line of thinking. But they don't see things God's way. They don't understand God's perspective at all. And we have to not buy into their philosophies, but develop within us the mind of Christ, as we're exhorted in Corinthians and Philippians, to have this mind in us, the mind that was in Christ Jesus. And so in seeing this bigger picture, David also knew not to gather glory for himself, but because it was the Spirit of God in him, he would attribute all to God, just as Christ humbled himself to God. Because Christ, who, being in the form of God, thought it not a thing to be grasped at to be equal with God, but made himself of no reputation, took on himself the form of a servant, and made in the likeness of men, being found in the fashion of a man, he humbled himself and became obedient, even unto death, the death of the cross. And so we see here that Christ and David were given glory and given honour and status, but they humbled themselves because to them it was to God the glory, not for themselves. And for me, the most classic example of this in the life of David is the bringing of the ark into Jerusalem. And I pointed out this in my exhort earlier in the year, that his wife Michal was upset that David humbled himself in dancing before the ark as they came to Jerusalem, rather than leading the procession regally as a glorious king. But David was giving glory to God, elevating him by humbling himself. And so that when they came with the ark through the gates of Jerusalem, singing to the King of Glory, here comes the King of Glory, that he may enter in. David didn't want that title attributed to him. He was just one of those worshipping and giving praise to the King of Glory, which was God, symbolised in the ark. And so he wasn't going to take this prestige and honour for himself as Michal wanted him to, but he was going to discard that honour and give it all to God, because God was the one who gave him that position in the first place. It wasn't even his. He didn't see himself as earning it or worthy of it. He saw God as the one worthy of all praise. And so we should learn from David and not try to manifest God to our own glory and so that people will praise us, but we must be humble in our manifestation of God and give the glory of all that we do to God. We mentioned earlier that David gained many victories through God's help, and he declared that many times, not trying to increase his own personal glory as a warrior, but he made sure people knew that it was God at work, that it was God that was going to deliver him from Goliath, not his own expertise with the sling. And so what about us? Do we give God the glory when we get praised for something, or even something we do in the ecclesia? Because we know that everything we have, all our abilities, all our gifts, they're all from God. And we're doing our work for him, for God. Or are we doing it for the praise of men? We have our choice. Are we going to seek after men's praise, or are we going to give all glory to God? Because it's God that works through us. So next, we're going to have a look at what I consider to be the biggest topic for us to look at tonight, which is the topic of mercy and forgiveness. And we mentioned this briefly in regard to Joseph last week, but we didn't delve in too deeply, and I did mention that we'd look at it more tonight. And so in our reading, in verse 3, we see the phrase, "the sure mercies of David." And it's an interesting phrase, this one, "the sure mercies of David." It appears a few times in Scripture, and then there are other inferences to it, like when those blind men are begging Christ as the son of David to have mercy. And so it's an interesting phrase that has two aspects to it, and you can't really have one without the other. Some would say that this is talking about the great mercy that God showed toward David, and others talk about the mercy that David showed. But really, in this phrase, you must talk about both. You can't have them separately. And we know this from Christ's words in the Sermon on the Mount, that God expects us to forgive one another if we want to be forgiven ourselves. And I think I forgot to put that up on the slide, but that's from Matthew chapter 6, where it's in the Lord's Prayer, forgive as we forgive those. And he also mentions it again in Matthew chapter 6 about forgiving others. And then in Matthew chapter 7, it's that measure that you meet will be measured to you again. So sorry, I forgot to put that on the slide. But this point is also really driven home in the parable of the unforgiving servant. So let's turn that one up in Matthew chapter 18. And we'll read through this parable that starts at verse 21. So Matthew chapter 18, beginning at verse 21. Then came Peter to him and said, Lord, how oft shall my brother sin against me and I forgive him? Till seven times? Jesus saith unto him, I say not unto thee until seven times, but until 70 times 7. Therefore is the kingdom of heaven likened unto a certain king, which would take account of his servants. And when he had begun to reckon, one was brought unto him, which owed him 10,000 talents. But forasmuch as he had not to pay, his Lord commanded him to be sold, and his wife, and his children, and all that he had, and payment to be made. The servant therefore fell down and worshipped him, saying, Lord, have patience with me, and I will pay thee all. The Lord of that servant was moved with compassion, and loosed him, and forgave him the debt. But the same servant went out, found one of his fellow servants, which owed him 100 pence. And he laid hands on him, and took him by the throat, saying, Pay me that which thou owest. And his fellow servant fell down at his feet, and besought him, saying, Have patience with me, and I will pay thee all. But he would not, and went and cast him into prison, till he should pay the debt. So when his fellow servants saw what was done, they were very sorry, and came and told their lord all that was done. Then his lord, after he had called him, said unto him, O thou wicked servant, I forgave thee all that debt because thou desirest me. Should not thou also have had compassion on my fellow servant, even as I had pity on thee? And his lord was wroth, and delivered him to the tormentors, till he should pay all that was due unto him. And so likewise shall my heavenly Father do also unto you, if ye from your hearts forgive not every one his brother their trespasses. So obviously the king in this parable is a symbol of God, and God has forgiven us an astronomical debt of sin, and he's offered us life and hope through his son, who we could never hope to repay that. And the way the servant here says, you know, have patience, I'll pay thee all, is kind of comical because of the sheer size of that debt. He was never going to be able to pay that. But it was forgiven him. And God has offered us life and hope through his son. And what does he expect? Well, he expects that we're going to respond to this love and this mercy that he's shown us by showing this same forgiveness to our fellow servants, showing this love of God to one another. And in that way, we're manifesting his character, because we're showing his character through us to one another. So if we do this, we're manifesting God in our forgiveness, reflecting his character and acting his ways. And David understood God's great mercy. He himself was forgiven of a terrible thing when he repented over the problem he'd caused concerning Uriah and Bathsheba. But he was also one to show great mercy to others in his life, because he always understood that this mercy of God And so he was a forgiving person, and when it came time, God also forgave him. And so we see some examples of that in his life. And as we've seen, these things go hand in hand, being a forgiving person and being forgiven. So David, he famously forgave Saul for chasing him as he was seen outside the caves. And we saw that as well in our play Friday night. And he showed great respect for Saul even after Saul's death. David remembered only the good that Saul had done and did not bring up the enmity, but made a song of remembrance, not just for his friend Jonathan, but for King Saul as well. And another great example that I like to consider is the example of David's forgiveness of Shimei. He was one who cursed and threw stones at David as David fled from Absalom. But when David returns, well, we read of his forgiveness in 2 Samuel chapter 19, and verses 18 to 23. And they went over a ferry boat to carry over the king's household and to do what he thought good. And Shimei, the son of Gera, fell down before the king as he was come over Jordan and said to the king, "Let not my lord impute iniquity unto me, neither do thou remember that which thy servant did perversely in that day my lord the king went out of Jerusalem, that the king should take it to his heart. For thy servant doth know that I have sinned. Therefore, behold, I am come this day of all the house of Joseph down to meet my lord the king." But Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, answered and said, "Shall not Shimei be put to death for this? Because he cursed the Lord's anointed." And David said, "What have I to do with you, ye sons of Zeruiah, that you should this day be adversaries unto me? Shall there any man be put to death this day in Israel? For do not I know that I am this day king over Israel?" Therefore the king said unto Shimei, "Thou shalt not die." And the king sware unto him. And so Abishai here was completely right in pointing out the penalty for what Shimei had done was death. But Shimei confessed, repenting and asking forgiveness, and David was not vindictive after the letter of the law and saying, "Well, you did this to me, this is your punishment." David was full of mercy and compassion, and David forgave him, seeing the bigger picture and knowing the mercy, the boundless mercy of God that he relies upon. And he displayed that mercy also to Shimei. He didn't need to protect his position as king. He was going to forgive Shimei this slight. And we remember last week that Joseph forgave his brothers even before they asked for forgiveness. And we've talked about David and Saul, and David respected Saul without needing Saul to confess to him, and spared him and honoured him even without an apology. And so we also should never withhold forgiveness from somebody else just because we're waiting for them to come and apologise to us. Because if we do that, well, we're just holding their sin and we're holding it inside of our heart, allowing it to continue to hurt us rather than letting it go with forgiveness. And we also must remember that our forgiveness of one another is not just our relationship between one another, but it's also about us and God. And we would never ever say that we're a higher authority than God. And therefore, we must be very careful not to hold someone accountable for something that God has already forgiven them of. Yes, actions have consequences, and we saw that in the life of David. And so sometimes if you put someone's wrong that they've done completely out of your mind, you may not actually be helping them. But still you need to forgive them. And then you can, once you've forgiven them, you can help them, maybe with some awareness, to grow beyond that, and never keep dangling that act or that thing that they've done over their heads. Because that's not helpful to them or to you or to your relationship with God. Because as we've seen, your forgiveness of others and God's forgiveness of you go hand in hand. Another great characteristic of David was his ability to bring out the best in others. And this was seen in so many of David's mighty men. David was a great leader in this way, and he inspired many others to great deeds. And he showed them what was spiritually important. He gave them guidance. He helped to nurture people's faith and people's talents. And he had an unbelievable roster of mighty men around him. Many of these men started as runaways from Saul, outcasts from society, ruffians. But David changed them into something truly special. And this is just how God works with every one of us, moulding us, shaping us through our lives and through our interactions with each other, through our trials, to bring out the best in us so that we can shine like gold. Because we were sinners, but Christ died for us. And we go through this life and we are being moulded and shaped as a potter moulds and shapes the clay. And we go through trials to refine us and so that our faith can shine like purified gold. And so we need to give this same support, this edification, this building one another up, this help, this strengthening, this support to one another as we work together towards God's kingdom. I think I've lost the slide on that one too. But we see also that David was inclusive. We see among his roster of friends and warriors, we see some Gentiles. And I spoke about this also in my exhort this year, that the tabernacle of David in Jerusalem, which was where he brought the ark, was a place of worship for all people, Gentiles included. And we're told that it's going to be re-established in the kingdom, a place for all to seek God. And this was brought up by James in the Jerusalem conference when Paul and Barnabas were preaching to the Gentiles, in that this tabernacle of David understood the impact of bringing this to the Gentiles. And so here we've seen many lessons of manifesting God in the life of David. And if you have a look back at our reading in Isaiah chapter 55, we'll just have a bit of a skim through and see what is reflected here in this chapter. So here we see the first three verses of come, buy money, buy without money, buy, come and drink, that for that which satisfies, that which is good, that which will make you live. And so this is like David who's worshipping and making the worship and the knowledge of God available to all who would come. And this is one of the greatest, this time of David is one of the greatest times to be a worshipper of God in Israel, where you had the great shepherd king who was writing psalms and preparing for the establishment of the temple under his son. And so for any worshipper of God, there was plenty of spiritual nourishment to be found in the kingdom of David. And is that what it's like for us? Is Hyde Park a plentiful place where we can find the food and the drink and the nourishment that we need to worship and to know of God? And then as we continue through this chapter, through verse 4 and 5, it talks about extending to be a witness to the people, calling a nation that you do not know. And in the life of David, well, that's David extending this witness to the Gentiles. Under the law, it was only the Jews that were saved. The Gentiles had to become part of the Jewish nation. And as we see in the time of Jesus, the Gentiles were very much shunned. But David was not like that at all. David welcomed them in and had many of his closest friends were from Gentile backgrounds. And David recognised that he was given his position by God. And he credited God with protecting him and working through him and saying it was God that did these things. And he gave God the credit. And we see here in the end of verse 5, it's the Holy One of Israel that was glorified there. Then we continue on with verse 6, seek the Lord while he may be found. Well, David's reign was a time where the nation did seek God. And it was a time when God was near to the people, not like how they abandoned God at the end of Saul's reign, and Saul stopped calling on the name of God, and God left Saul and his house. And then after David, at the end, of when Solomon went astray, and then when the kingdom was divided, it became quite scarce to find the things of God, except under a few good kings that were found scattered around. But this was a time when God was near and easy to be found and entreated of and sought by all the people. And so then in verse 7 we see repentance and mercy and forgiveness. And we've seen those principles of forgiveness in the life of David. And we've seen that we need to extend that love and that forgiveness to all people that we meet. And then verse 8 and 9 we've already considered about God's mind and those heavenly thoughts that are so far above the thoughts of this world, and how David was attuned to God's wavelength and David understood these great messages. And we also have been called to have this mind of Christ, to understand these things, to look into the scriptures and to understand the messages left there for us and to show those to others and not be dragged down to the thinking level of this world, no matter how much they try. And then the latter part of the chapter, I feel, talks of the plenteousness and the praise of God that was in the time of David. And much of the reign of David was the cause of the prosperity of the early reign of Solomon, where it's because of David's conquest that Solomon could come into an empire that was at peace. And everything for the temple and all the relationship with Hiram was all set up already by David, ready for Solomon to take over. And we see in these verses the productivity and the abundance of God's grace to the people. So this week we've got a little bit more time than we had last week, so we actually do get to use the whiteboard today to talk about some more specific and practical ways that we can use this example of David to manifest God in our lives. And so I have here on the slide behind me some general points that we've had today from our discussion of David. And so a bit of an example of what I'm looking for when we head over to the whiteboard is, let's say, for example, under the point of being humble and giving God the glory, something we could practically do in our everyday lives is we could say a prayer thanking God whenever we achieve something, whenever something goes well for us. Because this not only helps remind us that God is always with us and we're nothing without him, but we achieve everything through God and through his grace. But also, if we do this prayer in front of our young people or with our children, then they will also learn to attribute our successes to God and we won't get puffed up in our own self-confidence. So hopefully this thing's on. What other lessons do we have, practical ways to apply these lessons in our lives? So think of and involve those that may not always be present.
Yeah.
So yeah, and so including those that are disadvantaged, like Mephibosheth. Yeah. Well, I'm optimistic that you guys are going to fill up this board. So. Now I've got to spell Mephibosheth off the top of my head. Okay.
So David sought God to help him deal with the
yeah.
Yeah, so David was very inclusive and looked after, you know, people that were maybe a bit ruffians. David looked after them, people like Mephibosheth who couldn't care for themselves. And that was, of course, part of his promise that he kept to Saul and to Jonathan. But, you know, some in that time would have thought, well, Mephibosheth doesn't even count. And that's how Mephibosheth introduced himself. He's like, I'm just a lame dog. To David, he's like, well, you're going to eat at my table.
Well, you said there were quite a few Gentiles amongst his mighty men that we read just recently with the readings.
Yeah, he included many Gentiles in his mighty men.
Yes.
The story with Abigail, what I love about it is he was willing to be entreated. So he was really determined to not, you know, block off. And I think there's time that sometimes our passions can get the better of us. And at those times, someone needs to say, well, actually, take a breath, count to 10. There might be a better way to deal with this. So when we're given that counsel, that's one thing, but we have to respond to it. So it was what Abigail was able to do in her communication, which was so effective, was part of the story. But the main lesson for me is he listened and he stopped, and as a consequence, what does he say? You saved me from creating a great sin in Israel. So he was prepared to listen and then stop and change. So that's a pretty powerful lesson.
So David was willing to be entreated of Abigail, and we also should be able to listen to feedback. Yeah. Even if our mind is set on something.
You've got the being humble, which, and you gave an example of the ark, but to me the biggest example of David being humble is where, when the people, when he numbered the people, which under the law he's allowed to do, but the people need to pay a half shekel to the sanctuary, and he was warned that by his general that he didn't think it was a good idea, but David said yep. But then when the people didn't redeem themselves and Angel came and started slaughtering them, David acts like takes the blame. Which is very much like the prayer of like Moses and Elijah, where he didn't consider himself better than anyone else. He acted as a intercessor for everyone. Total opposite to the Pharisee, who said, I'm glad I'm not like these other people. He said, I am.
Yeah. So David didn't distance himself from his people, but in humility he joined in with taking the blame with them as an intercessor. And we got to do the same with each other, don't we? You know, not be like, oh, well, that's their problem. I'm not part of that. It's like, well, you know, we're all equal before God. We should help out.
Showing Christ to each other.
Showing Christ to one another.
Very largeness of spirit that He didn't just stamp his feet and say, look, I can't do it, you know, I'll go and sulk. He didn't. He joined in and tried to do the best that he could with what he was given.
Yeah, so he didn't sulk when he was told he couldn't build the temple, but he, you know, did what work that he could do to contribute to that work. And yeah, same with us. If we're told, well, you can't do this, or this isn't what's needed, or, you know, we're like, oh, well, I didn't want to help anyway. You know, we see, well, what is it that we can do? If we can't do that, well, where is it that we are needed?
That's the opposite of bearing your talent, isn't it? Yeah. Well, that's not him, so he gave the interest to someone to use. That's really that.
Yeah, exact opposite of the man in the parable of the talents.
Saul and Jonathan, he shows a tremendous amount of love and respect.
His love and respect in the Song of the Bow to Saul and Jonathan, whereas, you know, sometimes for us it's tempting to be like, oh, you know, that person, you know, they're not here anymore or they've whatever. But, you know, don't really miss them that much. They did this or did that against me. You know, they're not here to hear anymore. But David's like, no, he was very respectful and never brought those things up again against Saul. He was very, he, you know, forgiven him, hadn't he? Kept his promise. Even though Saul never kept his promises to David, he said, "Oh, yeah, I promise I'm never going to chase you again." Well, he didn't keep that, but David kept his promise to Saul regardless.
So what you're saying is he didn't allow the actions of others change who he wanted to be.
Yep.
He stayed true to manifesting God despite what others did.
Yeah, I think that's a really good one. We saw that as well in Joseph as well last week, not letting the actions of others be an excuse or change you from who you're trying to be and manifesting God. David was soft-hearted and forgiving, whereas Joab was like, well, the most logical course of action would be to kill this person and get the problem out of the way. And David was like, well, you know, that's not the way I think. And thankfully, that's not the way that God thinks, otherwise we'd all be dead. And, you know, but God instead, you know, he works with us and tries to help us. And we need to do the same with each other, not write people off and be like, well, you know, no point even trying with them, like Joab did. But like David, we need to open our heart and try and to help other people, even if they're, you know, actively working against you, like was happening with David.
Actually, just talking about the humility of David too, was when he wanted a drink of water, and one of the men broke through the vines and got him a glass of water. That he saw that he should not drink that was that person. He actually understood the sacrifice that person had made for him and poured it out. Yeah. So I think that shows the humility and the mind of that man.
Yeah, he valued the life of his men more than his position as their commander and their king.
He said something along the lines of their life.
Yeah. And that's how precious. I saw it.
I think picture, he had some really low lows in his life, but in the end, God still worked through him, and you see, which must have taken great faith to hang in there.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the beautiful things about David, especially in contrast to Joseph, who we looked at last week. We saw Joseph last week was tempted and he had troubles, but we never, he went through some dark times, but Joseph, we don't have any record of him sinning. Whereas with David, we are told so much about David and David's emotions, almost more than anybody else in the scripture through the Psalms, and how exactly he's feeling through all these aspects of his life. And he goes into the Philistines when he shouldn't have, and he, you know, does his terrible sins with Bathsheba and Uriah, and we see the ups and the downs of David, and he's a real person like us. We can associate ourselves with him and understand that he's human like us, and well, when we're feeling down, well, David did too, and how did David get out of that? And I think that's a really powerful thing about the story of David is, you know, he manifested God in his life, but he wasn't a perfect manifestation of God at all times, and neither are we, but he did his best, and we, you know, need to follow that example. And I think that's part of the power of this series. We started off earlier in this year in Bible class just looking at manifesting God, and then we looked at Christ, the perfect manifestation of God, and often that's where we stop because that's the perfect example, God and Christ. That's who we should be looking to manifest God, and that be correct. But I think the value of what we've been doing here in working through a couple of characters, and I think we've got, I'm not sure exactly, but I think we've got in the program to come up a couple more characters. And I think the value in that is seeing, well, here's an imperfect mortal person who wants to manifest God and in the kingdom will manifest God fully, but how do they do it in the struggles of life day to day, same as we do? And it's just a bit easier for us to associate ourselves with that. Sometimes we feel a bit of a distance from God and Christ. We feel like it's hard to attain, which it is, and we try our best. And that's the example we should always strive for. We should be aiming to be like Christ and to be like God. But these stories of Joseph and David who went through these struggles do help us, do ground us to see, well, we failed, now what? Well, let's get back up there. David, you know, that wasn't the end. David didn't fall in a heap and be like, well, I guess that's it for me. He got back up and did his best, and that's with us. So I think that kind of brings us to time. So thanks, everyone, for your points there, and hopefully that gives us some things that we can really put into practice in our lives so that we can manifest God to one another like David did.